What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Friday, April 3rd, 2020. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the latest film and TV news. This is Slash Film Editor-in-Chief Peter Soretta, and joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film Weekend Editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
Senior writer Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's going on?
And writer Chris Evangelista.
Hello, folks.
Okay, let's start off first with a little bit of Star Wars news or non-news or whatever. Solo is a movie that a lot of Star Wars fans love. There's a whole campaign going on in the Star Wars Twitter world. It's hashtag Make Solo 2 Happen. A lot of fans want this. And, you know, now with Disney Plus, maybe there's a chance that we could see it on the small screen. Brad, tell us about it.
Well, Jonathan Kasdan, one of the co-writers on Solo, recently responded to a fan's inquiry on Twitter about whether or not we might see a Solo sequel happen. And his response was mostly disappointing, but left open a little bit of hope, I guess. Kasdan said, "Don't think anyone's pursuing a Solo sequel at the moment. I think a feature at this point would be a tough sell, and the Disney Plus Star Wars slate is really pretty packed. All shows I'm looking forward to." So the door is open potentially for the story that started in Solo to continue at, in a Disney Plus series, but it sounds like that there aren't any active development plans to make that work because Disney already knows what other Star Wars shows they're going to make. We already know about the Cassian Andor series and the Obi-Wan series, and there's probably a lot more in the works as well. So sorry, Solo fans, you're going to have to wait and see what happens with Darth Maul and the Crimson Dawn a different time.
Yeah. Don't give up hope. You know, this whole saga is about hope. But the, you know what? It's also interesting. Like earlier this week, there was, I think we posted on Slash Film, there was like an artist who did a trilogy of Lando posters. Brad, were you the one that wrote that up?
I did, yeah. An artist named Peter Stoltz created like a series of posters called the Calrissian Chronicles. That was a trilogy of movies starring Billy Dee Williams as Lando Calrissian, as if the movies were made in like the late 1970s, early 1980s. They had a lot of famous blaxploitation stars in them, and the credits had like just like little funny details. Like the third one introduced Jean-Claude Van Damme as Darth Maul, which was kind of an amusing concept.
No, it is a really great piece of art. You know, after Solo, I was hoping that they were going to continue the story with a Lando movie and maybe continue to like the Crimson Dawn story in that film, but we're not going to get that. Maybe we'll get in the Obi-Wan Kenobi TV series. What is going on with this, Ben?
Yeah, so earlier this year, Lucasfilm decided to essentially pull the plug on the show and start from scratch. They had, as far as I understand it, a bunch of scripts, maybe even a whole season's worth of scripts that were finished and ready to go, and they had hired some people, and sets were built, and Ewan McGregor was back on board to star, And then everything sort of came crashing down. They just, I guess, got a little trigger, what was that phrase, gun shy or whatever, and they decided, all right, let's take another pass at this instead. So they fired the writer, or I guess maybe he left, whatever terms you want to use there. And they've been on a search to find somebody to rewrite this Obi-Wan show from the ground up, it sounds like. And now they have found somebody, and that person is named Joby Harold, and...
Who is that?
He is kind of an interesting, I guess, an unexpected choice for this job, because I would say he's arguably better known as a producer than a writer at this point. He has either produced or executive produced movies like Edge of Tomorrow, John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum, the Robin Hood movie with Taron Egerton. He has worked in TV a little bit. He produced the WGN America series Underground. As far as being a writer, though, I think he only has 4 produced credits, one of which is... his directorial debut, which is a movie called Awake from back in 2007. I don't know if you guys remember this movie. I think it was Hayden Christensen and like Jessica Alba or something. And like a person had to go be put under anesthesia for surgery or something. And then something went wrong and they were awake the whole time. And it was like this crazy thriller kind of thing. He also wrote King Arthur, The Legend of the Sword, which was supposed to start a 6 movie franchise, but obviously did not perform well enough at the box office to get even one sequel going, let alone 5 more. He's also written Army of the Dead, which is Zack Snyder's upcoming zombie movie for Netflix. And then I think he's also going to be working on a Transformers project, one of a billion that are probably in development right now for Paramount. So, yeah, he does not exactly have, like, a great track record in terms of writing stuff. So it's interesting because I think there were earlier reports that Lucasfilm was maybe looking internally at people like Dave Filoni or Christopher Yost, who have both worked on The Mandalorian, as potential options to be, you know, the new writer of this Obi-Wan series. But now it looks like they've gone outside of the Lucasfilm family a little bit and found Joby Harold. So I guess we'll see how that goes. But go ahead.
How did we go from like the guy that wrote like Drive to the guy that wrote King Arthur, Legend of the Sword?
Yeah, I would think that those roles would be flipped, and one person's, yeah, if you told me, like, one of these people had their entire scripts thrown out, I would not guess that it was the person who wrote Drive, but that's the world we're living in, Peter. It's a weird time.
Do you think it's, like, hard for them to get, like, I would think everybody in Hollywood would want to be involved in a Star Wars project, like, big names, or maybe, like, they're afraid because they've seen... you know, what can come from Star Wars fans who are not happy.
I think it's maybe a little of that, and I also maybe a little bit of, like, they've seen what's happened on the feature side of things, where, Kathleen Kennedy and different producers and stuff like that have brought in people who have very, very strong, like, authorial voices, and that has not always gone very well for Lucasfilm because they eventually end up butting heads and a lot of these people have been fired or let go or walked away or whatever. So maybe they're trying to find somebody that they can control a little bit easier. That's just speculation on my part.
The strange thing is The Mandalorian, from all accounts, like, it feels like, at least from what I've heard, it's been kind of like developed in a silo. Like it didn't have as many like cooks in the kitchen, and that turned out it is the most popular thing on Disney Plus, and people seem to love it and love Baby Yoda and stuff. So I don't know. I just, why can't they replicate that with other Star Wars series? That's what I'm wondering.
I don't know. I should mention that Deborah Chow, who was on board to, I think, direct all of the episodes, is still on board as far as we know. And Ewan McGregor obviously is still on board too. So it doesn't seem like it changed anything up too dramatically, except for just the writing of the scripts.
Yeah, I'm really curious what's going to happen with this. I know there were some rumors that part of the rewrite was that the original Obi-Wan Kenobi episodes were too similar to The Mandalorian, in that it was him kind of looking over young Luke Skywalker from afar. So, I mean, it's kind of like Lone Wolf and Cub again. But I don't know, it just amazes me that if that's true, how can both of those projects be developed at the same time within the same company without them realizing that until they're building sets?
Right.
Like, I don't know. It's crazy. Okay. Anyways, let's move on from Star Wars. Let's talk about Edgar Wright and what he might be directing next. Tell us about it, Chris.
Yeah, so, well, Edgar Wright has a new movie coming out this year, maybe. Who knows? It's called Last Night in Soho. But after that, he's moving on to a film called Set My Heart to Five, which is based on a novel of the same name. And this is the an abridged version of the synopsis. The story is said to take place in an all-too-human 2054 and introduces Jared, an android who undergoes an emotional awakening and embarks on a quest to convince humans that he and his kind should be permitted to feel. It's a quest sparked in part by Jared's introduction to 80s and 90s movies that leads to an unforgettable adventure across the West Coast of America after he determines to write a film script that will change the world. So yeah, it's literally about a robot who wants to write a screenplay. That's the new Edgar Wright movie. And honestly, that sounds kind of like perfect material for him, especially the, you know, the 80s and 90s thing, which I'm guessing is going to make this a very pop culture filled film. And Edgar Wright seems to excel at stuff like that. So yeah, this sounds like the perfect project for him.
Yeah, I'm so excited for this. When do you know when this novel is going to come out?
No, I do not. It doesn't have, I don't think actually it has a date yet. It's just a thing where they picked it up
preemptively
from the galleys. Yeah.
Well, I'm excited for this because this sounds like the perfect pairing for Edgar Wright. And it sounds like it would probably have a kick-ass soundtrack as well, judging by his previous films. Let's now move on to the doom and gloom part of this podcast where we talk about how the coronavirus is influencing the future of Hollywood. Let's start off first with how, I'm sure there's going to be lots of projects, film projects, TV projects that are going to be influenced by this time in our lives and what happened to us. It seems like the first of which we are learning is a new comedy series. Brad, tell us about it.
Yes. So a lot of people online, at least on film Twitter, have been joking about how we're going to see tons of indie movies at like Sundance next year and whatnot, about all these couples who are either, you know, finding love or breaking up while they're under self-quarantine during, you know, the coronavirus pandemic. But the Office executive producers, Paul Lieberstein and Ben Silverman, are taking a little bit of a different approach by being inspired by the new normal of workplace, which is people using video conferencing software like Zoom and Skype and Google Hangouts to engage with their coworkers and basically do whatever they need to do to get their job done. So these two guys are working on a new workplace comedy that is described as following a wunderkind boss who decides to have all of his staff connected online through this virtual interface and be face-to-face all day, every day, in order to keep track of productivity and make sure everybody is on task. There's no title for it yet, and honestly, even though it's, you know, being inspired by our current situation, there's no indication that coronavirus or like any kind of pandemic will actually be the impetus for this workplace comedy. It could just be, you know, the format or the concept of it. And really what it sounds like is we'll probably get a series that is something akin to like Searching or Unfriended, but in a comedic setting instead, where the show unfolds on everybody's computer screens. Modern Family actually did something like that, where they had an entire episode play out across phones and iPads and computers. And so that was actually worked pretty well. It was funny, and it was, an innovative kind of episode. But I just don't know if that's what they're going for, that can sustain itself for an entire series. But, you know, these are two guys, you know, who are experts on the workplace comedy. They worked on The Office. For those of you that don't know, Paul Lieberstein played Toby Flenderson on The Office. And Ben Silverman had a small role in the series. He was one of Jim Halpert's business partners at the sports publicity management company that they started towards the end of the series. And he was also an NBC executive for some time. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I guess it's better than having something that is, you know, just about like the pandemic and, you know, the most obvious things, and might have a unique approach to the workplace comedy.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that it's not directly about the coronavirus. What's the chances that this is going to be titled WFH? I feel like that's the new thing that everybody, WFH, work from home.
It might be. It could just be called work from home too.
It could be too. I'm also I'm guessing the timeline is too short to do this, but it would be fun if someone during this time, because we don't know how long this is going to go, right? Some people are saying it could last all summer. Some people say it could last until the end of the year. I hope not. But if it is, maybe a show like this could cast completely remotely, virtually, and then film it remotely over like teleconferencing like software.
It would be interesting. I'm not sure how difficult that is or yeah. anything like that, but yeah.
Yeah, no, that would be in the first socially distant filmed show. Let's do it. Yeah, I pitched it right here. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about Steven Spielberg has teamed with AFI, the American Film Institute, to launch this new movie club. Ben, tell us about that.
Yeah, so AFI, the American Film Institute, is like one of the, you know, premier institutions of film. They're like the gatekeepers sounds bad, but they release a list every few years of like the top 100 movies of all time. And they have a prestigious film school that a ton of famous filmmakers have come out of. So they have decided that they wanted to release or kick off this new movie club, which is called AFI Movie Club. And it is a daily virtual gathering to leverage our collective love of film on behalf of optimism in this time of global uncertainty. So Steven Spielberg, they wrangled him to introduce the first movie, which was The Wizard of Oz, earlier this week. There have been a few other movies since then, Moulin Rouge and Some Like It Hot, and today's is Dr. Strangelove. And basically, it's just every day AFI chooses an iconic movie for the world to watch together at home. Some of them have video introductions from special guests, celebrities, and movie stars and whatever. And basically, it's just, you know, they're going to have like some fun facts up there on their website and stuff about the different movies. It's just like a way for people to watch the same thing at the same time. The unfortunate news is that on their website, they announce what movie it is and whatever, but they just sort of send you to links of how to find these movies instead of actually hosting the movies themselves on their website, which the AFI is a nonprofit organization, so they probably don't have the kind of cash necessary to be able to pay the licensing fees to be able to host all of these, you know, super famous movies that are owned by studios and stuff like that. But I thought it would be a much cooler thing if you could just literally go to AFI.com and watch the movie there without having to have a pre-established, you know, subscription to any streaming service or whatever. But the way they have it set up right now is like they announce the movie, you can go to the website, read some facts about it, watch some videos on their social channels or whatever, and then just like it directs you to where the film is available to stream elsewhere. So yeah, if you're looking for more things to watch and want to watch some classic films, this seems like a good way to do it.
Yeah, the thing that's disappointing to me here is that it's really just an introduction from a famous director or star, right? Like, so it's, I would much prefer, I'd love like if there was a way for them to get Steven Spielberg to actually like do a live watch of you know, The Wizard of Oz, where he provides
Like a commentary or something. Yeah, that would be awesome. But yeah, these videos introductions are like 60 seconds long, and it seems like pretty haphazardly thrown together. These guys are clearly like reading off of cue cards and stuff like that. So it's not like the greatest, you know, the fact that, Robert De Niro is introducing Dr. Strangelove. Like when you watch the video, it's a little underwhelming. So I think I agree with you, Peter. That would be really cool if they could get people to actually commit some real time and energy into, you know, building this thing up and making it like a more of a must watch, a must participate type of event by providing something that we hadn't seen before, which would be, you know, those people or maybe other experts and stuff doing like a full-fledged commentary track. That would be really cool.
Yeah, we're doing a similar thing on slashfilm.com. We're doing a thing every day called Quarantine Stream, where we're recommending a show, movie, or thing that you can watch that you might not know about. So we're not going with what AFI is doing and kind of going for the cream of the crop. We're going for things that you probably haven't heard of or seen that we recommend you watch during this time of self-isolation and quarantine. So check that out. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Let's talk about South by Southwest, because, you know, this whole virus is destroying any semblance of any of the film festivals. This is usually where small films go to get exposure and get pick up and find a home and find a place to, you know, gain an audience. But now that they're not happening, like South by Southwest didn't happen this March, and we're coming up on what, like Cannes is probably not happening, the end of the year. Do we know if TIFF? Has TIFF said anything yet, Chris?
They're still acting like it's going to happen, but we'll see about that.
Yeah, we'll have to see. So now the South By isn't happening, what are they doing about it?
Right, so this is all still very up in the air, and there are no actual films lined up yet, but South By Southwest has teamed up with Amazon to do a one-time virtual festival. They put the offer out to filmmakers saying, you know, we're trying to do this, that the filmmakers will get, you know, paid for allowing their films to screen. And interesting enough, it's going to be completely free. Like, you don't need an Amazon Prime membership. You just need an Amazon membership to view these films. There's some hubbub about this. You know, some people may think, oh, this is a great idea, but others aren't sold on it because, you know, I'm seeing some rumblings online. Basically, it boils down to, this could hurt eventual distribution because, you know, if this is going to be uploaded free online, it's inevitable that these things are going to be pirated. And if there are, you know, if films that don't have distribution yet are immediately pirated, there's going to be no incentive for studios to pick these movies up if they're out there. So it's kind of an iffy situation. You know, no one's being forced to do it. Obviously, it's entirely up to the filmmakers if they want their films to screen or not. But I really don't know how many filmmakers are going to go for this idea. Maybe films that already have distributors will go for it. But, you know, beyond that, I really don't know. There's no date yet. They're hoping to have it happen this month. But, sure. You know, we'll see.
So are they basically announcing this before they've signed any deals with any films?
Honestly, that's what it sounds like. It just sounds like they're putting the idea out there and hoping filmmakers will latch onto it. But at the moment, we don't have any other details.
I feel like the only films that are going to take on this deal are films that didn't think that they were going to get distribution in the first place and are trying to, you know, take advantage of a situation where, so, you know, it'll get a bunch of eyes on this, like, South by Southwest Online Film Festival website or section of Amazon or whatever you want to call it. Like, I'm assuming, like, maybe some, like, little known documentaries and stuff, but I'm guessing it's the films that most people go to South by Southwest to see will not be available on there.
Yeah, I honestly don't know what's going to be on. Like, I really doubt, like, big stuff is, like, Antlers was supposed to play. I have a really hard time believing that's going to be added. And, you know, but then again, that already has a distributor. So maybe I really don't, you know, look, everyone knows my stance. I will gladly watch everything from my house and never leave again. But I know that's not ideal for filmmakers who, you know, love the idea of debuting their film at a festival with a huge audience and riding that buzz. And, you know, you're not going to get that for just putting it online.
And this will just be kind of like a more buzzed about advertised VOD. It's not like we're all going to be watching the movie at the same scheduled time, right?
Right. And honestly, this is a great deal for Amazon. It's not such a great deal for the filmmakers. And yeah. So, yeah, again, it's really up in the air. Hopefully we'll know more in the upcoming weeks.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I don't know. Online film festivals could be interesting. Like, if there was the idea of actually, like, us all watching virtually at the same time different films, like, that you couldn't just choose, like, you had to actually show up at a certain time.
Right.
That could be interesting, and it would also...
Peter, I have to interrupt you here for a second because there's some breaking news. Disney has pulled Artemis Fowl from theatrical release and is going to be debuting it on Disney Plus now, which is sort of surprising because it looks like they spent a lot of money on that movie. And actually, there are a ton of new Disney release dates.
Wait a second.
Dates.
So, first of all, Artemis Fowl, that was supposed to come out at the very end of May theatrically.
Yes.
Is it now hitting Disney Plus on that date? May?
We actually don't know. They haven't put a release date out for Disney Plus yet. It's just we know it's going to be debuting there, and they're scrapping its theatrical release entirely. But there's also a ton of other release date stuff from Disney, including a bunch of Marvel release dates. So I guess the most important one would be that Black Widow, which is supposed to be coming out pretty soon, is sliding into the Eternals release slot, which is in November of this year. So that seems to make some sense. And man, there are so many of these, Peter.
What happens to the Eternals then?
Yeah, so it's starting a cascade domino effect of delays here. So the Eternals is now going to arrive in February of next year. Doctor Strange 2 is going to be arriving in November of next year. Thor Love and Thunder, it looks like it's going to be February of 2022. Wes Anderson's movie The French Dispatch is going to be coming out in now July of this year. Indiana Jones 5, which I think originally they were looking at a 2019 release date for that. It's been pushed several times, but it's been pushed again to now summer, July 29th, 2022. Captain Marvel 2 is moving also to July of 2022. Let's see, Mulan, which was originally supposed to come out in March, now has a July 24th, 2020 release date. So that'll be coming out. Wait a second. July, that seems like the earliest one of this whole thing. It seems a little optimistic that theaters will be open in July, open and like ready for big blockbusters in July of this year. That's only a few months from now.
They didn't move Pixar Soul, and that's like has a June release date.
Oh, well, that seems like it's not going to be a situation that remains the way it is for a long time.
Don't know. I guess Disney...
Guys, relax. Jared Kushner is on top of this. We'll be fine.
Great. Yeah, that's perfect. Oh, and then the Ryan Reynolds movie Free Guy has been moved to December of this year. So that was another one that was supposed to be opening, I think, this summer and has now been pushed back to December, which December seems a little bit more reasonable to me than this July for some of these things. But man, there's a lot to go through here.
Yeah, let's usually we have some time to write this up and then parse through the information before we get on and comment on it. But I think there's a couple things that I think we should dissect here. Number one, that they've only decided out of all their entire lineup to put Artemis Fowl direct to Disney Plus. What do you make of that?
Oof. Anybody want to take this one? I don't know.
It's probably because it looked awful. They realized no one cares that much about it.
But it seemed like some of these, maybe like Black Widow. I guess they spent too much money on Black Widow to have her go direct to Disney Plus.
I feel like there's more buzz about Black Widow. Like people will go see a Black Widow movie in theaters. Whereas, is anyone excited about Artemis Fowl? I mean, HT like read the books, she went to the set, and even she thinks this does not look good. So I feel like no one is that interested in Artemis Fowl, and that's kind of why they're like, all right, we can push this one to Disney Plus, but they want those box office bucks for Black Widow and stuff like that.
What about Free Guy? That's now coming out in December. That seems like it would have been a perfect like loss leader, like get people to subscribe to Disney Plus while they're in this quarantine, like, and give them some new content. Like, that doesn't... Brad, I know you're a big comedy guy. Do you think Free Guy is going to make that much money theatrically?
I mean, it's a pretty big budget movie. It's very high concept, since the whole thing is that it's, you know, Ryan Reynolds playing a video game character who, you know, decides to step up and be more than just a non-playable computer character. And so since it's Ryan Reynolds, I'm sure that they're anticipating it'll be a big hit internationally as well. So I just imagine they probably don't want to take too big of a hit on that movie.
Yeah. The other shocking thing I think we've kind of briefly touched on is some of these release dates are in mid to late, July. Does Disney actually believe that we're going to be back in, you know, I want to say back to normal, but like, in a normal enough routine that we're going to be going to movie theaters in July?
I wonder if it's just like a strategic move. They're just like, they know that it's not real, but they're just doing it just in case or something. Like they want to like plant the flag in case other studios start to get ideas about it. I don't know. I'm fully expecting those to move.
The other day, Paramount moved the SpongeBob movie to July, and it's obviously them thinking July might happen too. But yeah, I feel like things aren't going to be back to quote unquote normal until like September, and that honestly feels optimistic.
Am I right in saying Pixar Soul, the release date was this June, I believe, June 19th, so that has not moved. Why have they not moved that? If they're moving everything else, why didn't they move the next big Pixar movie?
Well, I mean, My Spy is still slated for April 17th. No one's moved that yet, so let's all...
I think they just forgot about it. I love the idea of everyone involved with that movie completely forgetting that it exists and it being like mailed out. Like somebody is like forced to like take prints of the thing to theaters around the country and just like drop them off on the front porch because all the theaters are closed. But everybody just forgot about My Spy and they're like, well, I guess I better deliver this.
I don't know, this is so strange. You know, we had one last story on the dock that, you know, this kind of translates well because the story is about moviegoers and their eagerness to return to movie theaters. I know I am so, you know, I'm feeling so cooped up. I'm missing the movie theater and seeing movies in a big screen with other people so much. I know, Chris, you're probably enjoying staying at home and watching so much on TV. But Brad, tell us, like, you know, are people excited to get back in theaters after this whole thing calms down, or like, will people be hesitant to go back to theaters?
Yeah, a new poll conducted by the analytics company EDO asked 6,800 participants about their willingness to go back to theaters after all this nonsense is done and theaters are back open for business. And 70% of them said that they were at the very least likely in general to head back to movie theaters. And 45% of those were highly likely to get back in front of them. Of those 45% who were, you know, eager to get back, 20% said that they would hit up movie theaters as soon as they were open. But the other 25% said that they would probably wait a few days. Meanwhile, there's some people who are a little bit more hesitant. The other 45% of the group said they would wait a few weeks before getting a ticket to a theater. And then 11% said that they would wait several months. So they're being a little bit more cautious.
Like, what are you going to do, Brad? Like, are you like, when this thing dies down to the point that they reopen movie theaters, like, how long are you going to wait until you go to your multiplex?
Well, here's the thing. Like, even if they were to open theaters in, let's say, you know, July, you know, when Mulan is back, like, how much is there going to be to see in theaters besides Mulan? You know, a lot of the big movies that were supposed to come out in May, June, and July have been pushed back. You know, Wonder Woman 1984 got to push back. Ghostbusters Afterlife isn't coming out until next year. You know, the Minions prequel isn't coming out until next year now. And, you know, like we just talked about, Marvel shifting all their stuff and everything. So, like, is there really going to be anything good to see when
New Wes Anderson. And wait, did they push back Chris Nolan?
They just pushed back French Dispatch to October.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, that was part of the shift in the schedule because it was supposed to come out in July.
No, I think July is where it's supposed to come out now, right?
I don't think so.
Okay, maybe I misspoke about that earlier.
Great.
Didn't it say French Dispatch for October?
Oh, yeah, that's my fault. I'm sorry. I put because it said moves from. I thought it said. That's the only one I fucked
okay,
up.
So we misspoke earlier, and French Dispatch is not in July. It's in October.
October 16th is the French Dispatch.
That's good. There's not going to be, you know, anything really that I want to go out of my way to see. So unless they do the same thing that they were talking about doing in China, where they have, like, repertory screenings of, you know, big movies to try and reinvigorate people, get them to go, maybe with some, like, lower ticket prices, but movies that people want to see on the big screen again. But yeah, I mean, so it really just depends on the state of things and also what movies are playing.
Has the Chris Nolan film been pushed back at this point?
Not yet, no.
That has mid-July release date. I mean, I feel like I would have to go to the theater to see that.
I'd risk everything. Open, you're just going to show up?
Well, no, I mean, if it's open, open, I would have to put a hazmat suit on and go to my local theater. No?
I mean, that's how Christopher Nolan would want it.
Yes, he would want you to die seeing it in a theater.
He would want you to watch it through a piece of plastic directly in front of your face and then witness the IMAX in all of its glory.
Yeah, and be laughing and enjoying the movie underneath a mask. Yes, the way we need to see movies. Okay.
It'll be like the end of In the Mouth of Madness. You'll be alone in a theater cackling as... Tenet runs.
Okay, I apologize earlier of like the news just broke while we were recording this podcast, so some of that information was a little bit not correctly relayed, but you can go, we'll put a link to the article on slashfilm.com that will be up by the time you hear this to see all the release dates and find out where the movies lie for now. I'm guessing that this isn't going to be the permanent place for some of these movies, but we'll see. I don't know. This is a little scary because it seems like the summer has been canceled entirely. That is so sad. I was hoping with all the social distancing that we were doing, that like we were putting all this effort in, and my hope was that we could save at least some of the summer.
Peter, summer movie season kicks off April 17th with My Spy.
And Peter, there's always, remember, New Mutants doesn't have a release date yet, so they could really drop that in at any point and really kickstart summer movie season right.
Also, Peter, don't forget, no matter when these movies come out, everything is still terrible.
Yes.
Thanks for reminding me. Okay, guys, you can find more of all of our work at slashfilm.com. You can find this podcast published on iTunes, Google, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please feel free to send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns to us at peter@slashfilm.com. And rate and review this podcast on iTunes. Tell your friends, spread the word, and we will see you on Monday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.